This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
It's been a long time since we last chatted, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think, what, 2 years? Maybe three?
Can't be that long.
Or maybe 2 years for sure, I would say.
And as much as things change, they stay the same.
Absolutely. The trend is clear. We're just moving in the same direction. It's terrible.
Do you think most people are dumb?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, they're all gifted with reason. The problem is that they don't use it independently of another person's guidance. I mean, they receive all those informations and they don't think about what it actually means or what it could mean for their future and so on. So they're just driven by those news, you know.
No, but I mean, Claudio, I thought that there were a lot of smart people, you know, during the COVID era. I thought, hey, we are going into a new paradigm. And now it's as though it never happened.
I wouldn't say so. I mean, of course, okay, I'm in the physical gold business. I'm fortunate that I can deal with people who share the same values, the principles of liberty, non-aggression principles, you know, humble entrepreneurs. I mean, all of them are entrepreneurs. There's not an even one manager among those clients, which is quite interesting. But yeah, I think, you know, they see it the same as we do. I mean, everyone is preparing. People are buying gold, as you can see. Silver, especially the rest of the world. It's not the West, which is the big buyer or responsible for the upswing in gold and silver. It's really the rest of the world. But yeah, people are traveling around. I just came back from Asia to check out Bali and Singapore. So I'm always traveling. I've been to Costa Rica, looking at this country.
I was in Asia a few months ago too.
Okay. I really have to say, you know, I have been traveling past 2 years a bit more. I had to restart again, let's call it that way. And so the first time that I really felt very positively surprised was when I went to Bali. Because, I've been there the last time 10 years ago. And wherever I went to in the past, you know, usually all these countries turned into the worst direction. But I had the feeling that Bali and Java is much more, it's more nicer than 10 years ago, much more clean. And at the same time, people are really happy, you know, they're all smiling. You really feel welcome. I mean, it's completely different. I mean, you're traveling in Europe and the United States. I mean, it's kind of collective depression, you know, among the masses. And Asia is, yeah, different. So it was a nice trip. It was a good trip. Good to see.
I one-upped you. I went to China.
Okay. Tell me.
I was pleasantly surprised. That place is next level.
Yeah, I mean, China has been built up by central planning with the money of the West. Mao was a Yale man. I mean, you will find an article from William Buckley, Yale University, Yale Chronicles, 1973, front page, saying Mao was a Yale man. And then we had Kissinger going over when they...
Hang on, though. It's not... Central planning is not quite correct. I think it's a bit of a trope. I mean, it's fairly decentralized. I know it sounds crazy, but I would argue that China is probably more decentralized than the US. I mean, in terms of its federal structure.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and still, you know, I mean, China is a very authoritarian government at the end of the day.
It is quite authoritarian, yes. I mean, you have to be if you've got 1.5 billion people. Otherwise, you have India.
Yeah, of course. I mean, question is always, do they really have 1.5 billion people?
whoa. We're only 5 minutes in.
I mean, you know, this...
baby steps. We've got to work our way there.
No, I think right now I just heard, you know, I mean, Xi Jinping has some issues with the military leadership. So I also heard from people in China that they were not so happy with, especially what happened during Corona and so on. So I really don't know. I think, you know, it's hard. I mean, as you know, these days there is so much, all the news, everything we see, I think still, you know, I think 80%, 90% is bullshit. Especially when you look at the mainstream media, I mean, they don't tell us what's really all about. I mean, it's they're pushing their own agenda, their Hollywood script, you know, how to control and divide and fear the masses, and that's it. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. And I think, yeah, a lot of people are preparing, a lot of people realize what's going, where we are heading. And I mean, of course, you know, censorization is becoming bigger. It's, you're not free, you're not allowed to speak up what you think. You know, for the wrong opinion, you might be jailed. I mean, so this agenda is, you know, pushed also heavily forward in the Western world, which also leads to the fact that more people don't speak up any longer. And I mean, it's a luxury to have your own opinion. You know, I'm also in Switzerland, so I still hope, you know, we have a bit. We were the most free country in terms of culture when we look at the history of Switzerland, because, you know, we really butchered, you know, everyone who wanted to try to steal our liberty or our property. For 200 years, we basically killed all those schmucks, you know, the Habsburgs and the Bourbonians and all the royalties. And we were, you know, called the cow Swiss, the anarchists from the mountain. So, I mean, the freedom of speech, it's something in Switzerland, you know, I mean, you don't have any issues so far. It's really more that most of the people are not free to speak, because otherwise they lose their job or they have no friends, or I don't have no clue. I mean, it's a luxury to these days to have your own opinion.
World War III is a film that you're working on. Is that right?
Yeah. It's the same. Yeah, it's the same. I mean, okay, it's a good friend of mine from Washington, D.C. He basically asked me if I would help to produce the movie. I did together with him also our first movie, which was done in the same way. We started in 2020 in April. We started interviewing people about Corona. And out of these interviews came then the movie Planet Lockdown, which has been censorized. I mean, the first interviews came out, we have been blackmailed and censorized on Google, everywhere, Facebook, within 72 hours. But still, we reached out to 20 million people per Forbes and Washington Post. But that was the first movie that we produced together. And now the second one is basically also, we just interviewed roughly 22 people, especially in the United States, in the UK, in France, in Germany, also in Switzerland. So that's where we focused on. So we had Ron Paul, of course, who opened up the interview series. We just published his interview last week. In the next few hours, I'm going to release the next one with General Kuyat. So he used to be the chief inspector of the Bundeswehr, so the highest military function, and also the relay between politics and military. And so, you know, the guy was in charge. I think his peak was around 2000, 2005. He was also chairman of the NATO Commission, Chief of Staff Commission. So he was responsible in the past, you know, how to establish a mechanism to have open communication channels and to keep a kind of balance of power strategy. So he established all those joint Russian NATO commission, joint Ukraine NATO commission, stuff like this, so where people were interacting. And he gives a good lecture how basically the Western world pushed us into this war in Ukraine. And he also says, you know, especially the Europeans over the last few years, especially since Trump, that the Europeans really are the warmongers, that they are pushing, that they're, you know, they really, yeah, they want to have this war. You know, it's the West that is basically the aggressor, and not just, you know, Russia, who basically as an answer to Western politics and doctrines invaded Ukraine on the 24th of February or whatever it was. So, I mean, yeah. So we are talking about cause and effect, and not only about the symptoms in this movie. So we have Kuyat, we have Douglas MacGregor. In the States, we have Wilkinson, Wilkinson, former chief of staff of Colin Powell. We have Charles Freeman, American ambassador, Jewish guy. You know, he has been in Saudi Arabia, everywhere. I have Peter Ford. He used to be my ambassador when I was based out in Syria a few years ago, or two decades ago, let's call it that way. He was the British ambassador, and he was pretty funny because I asked him, so what is the main task of a British ambassador in the Middle East? And he joined the Foreign Service in 1971 and was really in all different kind of ambassador positions all over the Middle East for, you know, 30, 40 years. And so he told me, well, you know, the main task is to sell weapons for British aerospace. So we have the former chief of intelligence, Alain Juillet. You know, it's basically the French National Service, like the CIA, comparable. Some other French generals, high-ranking officials. We have General Fahrt. He used to be the political advisor of Angela Merkel. So we have really Prince Michael of Liechtenstein. So we really have Scott Horton, Libertarian Institute. Excellent guy when it comes to understanding of international war and especially Afghanistan, Iraq, and so on, the whole Middle East. So I think it's great interviews, and based on these interviews, so we release the interviews now weekly, on a weekly basis. Basically, you know, because a movie is always cut, and maybe, you know, one guy gets 2 or 3 minutes in the movie, so we thought it's important that we release the interviews first. Kind of a teaser for the movie itself, but also to have full transparency from the beginning, so that everyone, you know, it's. I mean, we of course we cut the interviews a bit, but really only that stuff which was irrelevant, or your noise stuff. Which, yeah, I mean, you start the conversation and then you basically cut it down to the substance of it, not to make it, you know, 2 hours, but maybe to have it in an hour and 20, 30 minutes.
But why World War III? Why that label?
Yeah, because, I mean, that's, you know, when you look back into history, of course, every 80 years we had a reset. If you go back 80 years, you know, Second World War, you go back another 80 years, Civil War in the United States, the big movements, the big changes in Europe, you know, French Revolution, that kind of stuff. You go back another 8 years, it's the War of Independence in the United States. So every 8 years we had a kind of reset. And the last two world wars basically were about dividing Europe and Asia, especially Germany and Russia. Because, you know, the Brits, we had this old Halford Mackin, the doctrine, heartland theory, basically saying, you know, the British, they control the world because they control the seaways, they control the trade on a global scale. That's why they have the empire. If they lose the seaways or the trading hubs and so on, or goods are being moved on the land, and then the Brits would lose their empire. And of course, when Germany and Russia, First World War, you know, before it, I mean, Germany at the end of the 18th century produced more steel than Russia, France and UK together. And also when it comes to the ability to read and write and count, I mean, in Germany you had, I think, 90% were literate. And while in the surrounding countries, I mean, maybe 2/3 of the people were not able to read and write. So I mean, yeah, so we have this, I think this is still also, I mean, you know, the British, when they lost the empire to the Americans, Brzezinski took the same strategy in his big chessboard. Also how to, you know, we have to avoid that Europe and Asia gets together. If the trade becomes, you know, from Vladivostok to Lisbon, I mean, then if that gets together, then we lose a lot of influence in Europe. And there is no U.S. empire possible any longer. And I think that's exactly the same stuff we are in again. And that's why also, yeah, I mean, war is, you know, we also looked at the political ratings of Macron and Starmer and Merz in Germany and so on. I mean, they are hated, you know. What, 6, 8, 9, 10% of the people still stand behind these guys. The rest really hates them. So whenever you have internal problems, then you try to find an enemy outside, you know, to reshape and to refocus. Divide and conquer at the end of the day, you know. make sure that they don't think about you, but that they start fighting migrants and, I don't know, wars and, yeah.
Is Europe tickets?
Is Europe?
Tickets, is it gone? Is it sinking?
Yeah, definitely. I think you cannot hold it. I think it Europe is in the focus, especially Germany, of course. So there is, you know, we are deindustrializing Europe. We are, yeah, they are blowing pipelines up. They, this melon fraction politicians, I always call them a melon fraction, outside green, inside red, in the core brown. You know, they have their political agenda that we have to switch to all those green bullshit sources. And so they actively promote also this war against Ukraine and Russia. I mean, against Russia, of course, because it fits their agenda. But at the same time, I mean, it's not possible that we can live or operate in Europe with green energy. It's just, it's a Muppet show. It's a joke. And that's what they are doing. So, I mean, they're also lockdowns. I mean, it's whatever they do, it's basically also a war against the small and mid-sized companies. It's a war against the middle class. It's a war against, you know, the productive people. So we are at focus, even by our own governments. And this is the agenda, yeah. I mean, I had an interview with Prince Michael. Let me give you... Prince Michael had an interview, I think, a few years ago. That's also recorded. So he told me that he had an interesting conversation with a high-level official from the OSCD, you know, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. And so the guy was telling Prince Michael what they have in mind for us in the future. And then Prince Michael said, and that was my moment of awakening. He said, so he said, well, if you're going to implement those kind of steps, then there will be no private wealth, no private savings. And then the guy from the OECD smiled very nicely, looked at him and said, yeah, well, that's basically true. But, you know, we have to steer the economy and we can only steer people in debt. But you cannot steer people with wealth. And so that's what it's all about. I mean, you know, what we are witnessing right now is, as I said 5-6 years ago, it's a cultural revolution. You know, the West stood up for individualism. So the individual stands above, you know, the collective. It's based on self-ownership. You know, we own our own body and mind. It's a God-given right. Or we have given that right by birth. Nobody... Not even the government has the authority, you know, to rule over our mind or body. Because if they can do that, then there is no private property at all. And that's where we are at the moment. I mean, we're really going away from an enlightened society with Kant and Voltaire and, you know, and all the big philosophers. We're going back to barbarism. And those rulers and sociopaths who truly believe that they are somehow anointed or God-chosen to play, you know, his deputy on Earth because they are so super smart and whatever. I mean, they are all, I mean, sociopaths completely. But they are the rulers. I mean, that's a centralized system is centralized. And you have
a
minority.
Why?
Because, I mean, even the idea, you know, the idea of a state, you know, the state is the big fiction that everyone believes you can live on the cost of everybody else. So, I mean, you know, the state gives promises to the people that they get something for free. And when they accept that kind of idea that we need state to govern ourselves, I mean, then they already... give in also to the idea that they are rulers and servants, you know, because it will be a two-class society or two-class system. You have a few guys. I mean, it's such a joke because, you know, I mean, we believe that the majority of the people are not capable to lead themselves, but they are stupid, but we're going to elect some people which we believe are stupid, that they take over more responsibility and, you know, then rule over us. And it's people have to organize themselves. I'm a Swiss, so what I'm promoting for the last 5-6 years was decentralize. You know, we can organize everything on the lowest level, on the level of municipalities, that or maybe of a city. But that's it, you know, so we, because democracy, especially direct. I mean, it also means, as per Aristoteles, the Greek philosopher, demos, you know, the village, kratia, the rulers.
What do they call it? Philosopher kings.
Yeah.
I'm actually a fan of dismantling democracy. I don't like the idea that mob rule is the order of the day.
I fully agree. I mean, that's why I'm saying, you know, the only way it's going to work is, you know, if you keep it as low as possible.
Mm.
You know, because you have to limit the wishes of the people, but you also have to limit the power of the bureaucrats, which have to administer. I mean, we always have to organize ourselves somehow. I mean, it also makes sense that we have a doctor, you know, living nearby, and that we might build the hospital together with some other states, you know, to reduce costs and so on. So people want to organize themselves, which is okay. But I think we have, you know, so direct democracy. I mean, I'm Swiss, so that's basically our story. That's our storyline. That's part of our culture. I believe in the competition of ideas. You know, I truly believe maybe, you know, let's look at Singapore. If there is, you know, a centralized system with a ruler somehow, you know, that might work, you know, or if there is a king somewhere in Africa, I don't know. I mean, tribes or different cultures, different, the rule of law comes out of culture. And so we don't have one system that fits it all. But I think it has really very much to do with the culture within the country. And honestly, the Swiss, I mean, we always stood for, you know, we are precise, you know, a handshake is a handshake, we don't cheat. I mean, okay, let's say at least before we had the big, before middle of the 90s, you know, when the whole world turned into this US empire, MTV, Muppet Show, Think Global, Act Local. You need an executive MBA to compete in today's world, and all this crap started. You know, and then which was also. I mean, it's you know, we need decentralized structures, and if people, you know, and we need competition of ideas. Meaning, you know, if let's assume here in Switzerland, I live in Zug. If the canton of Zug believes that we should be a capitalist, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, low taxes or no taxes, whatever, that should be possible. And if Germany, Zurich, the city of Zurich, if they decide to become a socialist paradise and everyone owns everything and no private property and you have to sing the international hymn every morning, I mean, then they should do it as well. You know, let's try which idea is going to. I mean, at the end of the day, people want to have food and shelter, and hopefully, you know, some even want more.
Well, I mean, Klaus Schwab wants you to own nothing and be happy.
I mean, Schwab is, I mean, it's, I mean, I saw a video with Epstein yesterday. I saw the interview, the conversation he had with Steve Bannon. And that was pretty interesting because, you know, Epstein has been sold to us as the wild sex guy, you know, child parties and so on and blackmailing people. But so Epstein was a chosen one. He was really, you know, he was chosen by Rockefeller. He joined the Trilateral when he was 30. He was at the board of the Rockefeller Foundation. I mean, he had close contacts with the Rothschild family. You know, he was really the big mover. Much, much, much more important than we always thought. So I mean, it's a centralized system, you know. It's and then of course we have a centralized monetary system. We have these central banks, so they can create money out of thin air. You know, they can decide how much interest they want to charge. They can also decide who is going to receive the funds and who's not. Who is too big to fail? You know, they also know the cycles. When they know the crash is coming, when we increase interest rates and when we lower it, you know, then it's so. And this is this money system is a big fraud. And some people are still in there, you know, for 200, 300 years. So it's a centralized system with centralized structures. And there you have certain families which are more important than others. And these clubs, you know, the Council of Foreign Relations, the Trilateral, the Bilderbergs, the World Economic Forum, I mean, the Freemasons, you know. Then, of course, we have also Zionist Jewish Mafia, All this because they also believe, I mean, everyone who believes that they are God chosen, that they are better than others, fit into this club, which we are not in.
Have you read Hans Hermann Hoppe's book, Democracy, the God That Failed?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, I'm a big fan. I know Hans pretty well. It's a great... I learned a lot from Hans. And this the book, Democracy. I wanted to establish a classic liberal party 20 years ago with a friend of mine because we thought, let's go into politics and, you know, let's bring some more liberty and freedom. And then I read Hans's book. And afterwards, I had to say, hey, forget about it. We cannot go into politics, you know, because politics is always force. And we don't want to use force. So it's the wrong direction. And so we've cancelled the old stuff again.
But, I mean, his core argument is superb. I mean, basically, democracy is tyranny of the majority, and it's a threat to freedom.
Absolutely.
By its very design.
Yeah. No, it's the mob rule. Yeah. It's really 51. A goes together with B to rob C, and the next time B goes together with A to rob whatever. So it's mob rule. It's state also. It contains the wrong motivation. It's always about redistribution of wealth, stealing.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to steal your shoes, but if I get 51% in an election in a poll, you know, then it will be okay.
So but it's also unstable.
It's institutionalized robbery.
But it's also unstable because it's completely open to infiltration by foreign interests.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure. Sure.
I mean, democracy is not sovereign.
As I said, you know, because I'm thinking about, okay, I always try to push the people are also looking for new ideas or for solutions for the future. I mean, they went through this corona, they have seen that the government basically crossed the red line with corona. I think a lot of people realize that. You know, we have a constitution, and in the constitution we are protected, but all the governments all over the world basically ignored the constitution. You know, and I think that was really a red line, which a lot of people realized, okay, I mean, if they do it once, they're also going to do it the second time. I basically always said, okay, the Swiss history is decentralization. That's why we never had a government, you know, we never had a king. We have seven presidents, even today, in the system. You know, we don't have only one. So we always had this division of power. And until 1848, we basically had a pretty good system which was limiting that power. And so democracy, as I said, you know, if you limit it to the village that you are living in, I mean, then it's okay because you can only vote on stuff which you are directly impacted. But you cannot vote and somebody else outside of your village has to pay for it. Because that's today's democracy. You know, if we in the German-speaking part have the majority, we might rob, you know, the Western-speaking part, or we might rob always. I mean, yeah, the more you scale it, the more it gets corrupted. If you keep it as low as possible, I think that's at least, you know, it's part of our history. It's part of the Swiss history. So therefore, I think, I mean, they're always talking about Build Back Better. I mean, they want to bring us back to the Stone Ages. But I think when it comes to the political system of Switzerland, definitely. I mean, then, you know, we should go back to what made us prosper and free. And that was a non-centralized Swiss system at the end of the day, containing of cantons and also direct democracy. Really, you had to go to a square on the place and you had to vote yes or no. And everyone had to show that he was saying yes or no. I mean, so it's...
But even that is not all that great. I mean, why must you vote? Just remove voting altogether. And let's go back to, I don't know, kings, dictators who are benign.
Yeah.
I mean, it's private. Think about it. Hold on. To a monarch, right, governs because of private property. I mean, it's the ultimate.
Yeah, I mean, he owns everything. So if he's a smart and sound monarch, then he makes sure that he doesn't kill his own people and that he does not destroy his own wealth, that he is basically marrying and trying to establish a more secure whatever. I mean, so, yeah, you own. So, but I mean, monarchs, yeah, you know, I don't want to, I'm not the property of a funny guy claiming he to be a monarch because there was the biggest, they were the biggest crooks a few hundred years ago. Had, you know, fixed amount of troops and were stealing, and then they finally, from pirates or whatever, from criminals, they became monarchs. But of course, they're all, I know other monarchs. I mean, I know some royal members. And of course, when I look at the Liechtenstein family, I think that's, I always got a very sound. I mean, I would rather prefer to live under the Liechtenstein rule because they're classic liberals. You know, they understand private property, at least they respect it, you know, then to live under the Mappacho that I'm in right now with all these Swiss clowns we have in Bern.
But I mean, that's the point that I'm making. I mean, a monarch has a long-term interest. If he just goes and kills the people who live on his land, then what, I mean, that's ridiculous, because then he doesn't get any agriculture, et cetera, et cetera. He obviously wants, like a farmer, right? A farmer who's got farm workers living on his land, he wants them to be happy so that everything becomes productive. There needs to be a symbiosis.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, as I said, you know, we need, I mean, you know, it's what do I want? I mean, I always said, you know, now it's the time to find the right neighbors. I basically want to be surrounded with individuals who are, who understand that they own themselves, you know, they are their own, so they're responsible for their acts and deeds. You know, take self-responsibility, they believe in private property, they don't steal. I mean, they believe in the non-aggression principles. They don't steal, they don't betray, they don't kill. I mean, it's pretty simple, you know. And when I look around here in Switzerland, then I truly, you know, we don't need, I mean, some people believe that if we don't have a government tomorrow, mass killing will start, a mass slaughter, and everyone is going to rob the other and so on. And I think, you know, if you would have no government in Switzerland in certain areas, you know, the next day it would be, you know, just a big party, and people could restart thinking, you know, how to be really productive.
Oh, but Claudio, but what about the roads?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, why do we need, you know, government build roads? I mean, what? This is the biggest, mafia we have in the country, you know, the local construction mafia.
If it wasn't for the government, we wouldn't have roads, Claudio, because nobody knows how to build a road other than the politicians.
Yeah, you know, the most prosperous in the past, you know, the most prosperous nation regions became the ones who had not that many roads, because the roads were always used by the tax collectors. So, you know, the mountain area in Switzerland, going up to the mountain on these heavy, small roads, there was an advantage back then. But yeah, I mean... No, I mean, we don't need government for nothing. I mean, honestly, we don't need to be governed. You know, what we have, but we have to, yeah, we, you know, we should not just be a piece of meat with walking around with a brain, which we not use. You know, we really should, yeah, we are gifted. Homo sapiens mean gifted with reason. So every single person, it's not dumb or, you know, stupid. He might be brainwashed. Or he might be just, you know, very materialistic, living just into the day, and you know. But this, what they lack is basically independent thinking, and also to really trying to grasp what's going on, and then come to your own conclusion. Just to think about it once. What does it mean when the government says we lock down everything? You have to stay at home. You're not allowed to go outside, and so on. What does that mean? You know, how can they do that? Why are they? I mean. And that's the beginning of the journey, you know, when people start thinking independently. That's why it would be so important that they can also speak freely, because the only way to enlighten people is by having direct conversations and to really exchange, you know, ideas without being afraid to be locked away. So that's why we need freedom of speech.
You know? But I mean, have it. I would argue that property rights trump freedom of speech.
Property rights trump freedom of speech.
I would say that they come first.
I mean, you know, private property starts with self-ownership.
Yeah.
That's so we own our own body and mind. So it goes all together.
Yeah.
You know, because when we own our own body and mind, then, you know, freedom of speech is private property.
Yeah, but what I'm saying that. Yeah, but Claudia, why I'm saying that is because if we look at people around us, the protesters and those who want to be part of movements and freedom fighters and all this kind of stuff, they always fight for speech. Very rarely do I see them fighting for property rights.
Yeah, I mean, they don't. I mean, these are just political Muppet Show identity groups, which have been created by, you know, the mainstream media. And so they are also, they have, you know, I mean, it's very much collectivism, Marxism, you know, it's the delusion, the house, whatever. It's toxic. They're poisoned. They understand something's wrong, but then, of course, you can also lead them into a wrong direction. And as long as they just repeat what they are being told and accept the enemy that they have been given and so on, you know, simple answers. But it's all about divide and conquer. I mean, it's really, that's how it works. I mean, that's the oldest agenda in town. That's how it works. You know?
Well, that's why I was bringing up monarchy earlier, because monarchy is about property rights. And although I'm not a fan necessarily of, you know, being a peasant in a kingdom, I think it does outweigh that of being in a democratic society where it's mob rule. Ultimately, I think Hans Hermann Hoppe was arguing for natural order as the best, where we basically govern our communities based on voluntary agreements. But I mean, that's kind of like what Plato was talking about. Where a city shouldn't really be bigger than 5,000 people, more or less, because he was saying that once it goes beyond that, you no longer know the people. Everybody becomes a number, and then it becomes more complicated.
Yeah. No, I mean, agreed. I mean, we don't need, but I give you, let me give you an example when it comes to Switzerland with this, even if you hate it, this direct democracy on the municipality level. I mean, so we still have, you know, so we have the municipality, meaning, if I was living in Cham and my municipality or the people living in the municipality were raising taxes and so on, I always had the possibility to move to another village 500 meters away, which had lower taxes. You see, I mean, so even when you keep it on that low level, you always have the competition even between the different villages and cities and so on, or regions. So that keeps, you know, as long as you have the freedom to move or to decide with your feet, then there is competition. And then, of course, if one municipality is just going in the wrong direction, I mean, then they're going to run out of people. So I'm just saying, I mean, there are different, of course, I could live, you know, somewhere. And once we need a road or whatever, I mean, I would have to gather anyway, a few people together and, you know, trying to organize down the street. So I'm just saying, we always need to organize ourselves, because most of the people, I mean, when you talk about anarchy, and anarchy means nothing else than without rulers, you know, but if you talk about to them, you know, we need anarchy, no rulers and so on, then they always, they react a bit shocked, because they cannot imagine what this means. You know, for most of the people, anarchy means total chaos and destruction, which is basically the interpretation of the left, but it's called anomalie, you know, what they understand under anarchy, anomalie. And so I think, you know, sometimes you have to give the people also an idea. And I think in Switzerland, the best idea I was able to grasp was that we just go back to what we did in the past, and which really led to the free nation that we have become. And the last 25, 30 years, I mean, it has been changed, of course, tremendously, like everywhere, you know, middle of the 90s when the Soviet Union collapsed. I mean, I was back then in global business, working for airline companies. I mean, I realized how fast, you know, everything changed, and how the new Muppet Show and script and mass media and US dollar as the world reserve currency, and, you know, fueling the system with credit and so on. How fast it took place, you know.
But what I was alluding to also is that you're talking about anarchy, which means without rulers. Now, I live on the African continent, so by default, we are more anarchist than the rest of the world. But that's not necessarily a good thing. But it also is a good thing. It just depends on where you're coming from. I prefer having a broken system like that, because it's difficult to explain unless you live here, but there is a sense of freedom that comes with that chaos. We can get away with more, if that makes sense, because we don't have the tight top-down imposition of the state. However, it does mean that we have everything around us is broken, just about, right? Like nothing really works. But it also forces you into a sense of self-reliance, independence. You need to make things work, because you can't rely on the government.
Yeah. No, I think that's, as I said, you know, it's different regions, different cultures. That was also the beauty of our planet, you know, that we had all those different cultures in all different places. And we can see that it's all this stuff is being destroyed as well. You know, this cultural Marxism, you know, mangle all together, destroy every single culture. But yeah, at the end of the day, you just want to be surrounded with sound individuals, you know. And when I look at my close friends, I mean, the closest ones, they all live abroad. some are in Egypt, some are in the States, some are in Asia, some are in other European nations. And then I have, it has to do with the individual as such, and also the principles he believes in. And as long, because we are gifted with reason, so reason always drives us towards the good. You know, because once people realize that, we should not steal and betray, because we also don't want to be stolen and betrayed. And it makes sense not to kill someone, because you also want to go out and have, a good evening without being threatened that somebody could shoot you and so on. So it stands and falls with the individual, and has nothing to do with any kind of government or whatever. But the individual as such has been also very much influenced by the local culture. And so, I just want to have good people, and with good people surrounding us who don't want to steal and don't make me responsible for their
whatever. But that's exactly the point, Claudio. I think people in their sort of natural habitat, if you just leave people alone, they tend to get on, right? Because nobody wants conflict. The people who want conflict are those in power, almost always.
They live from it. It's divide and conquer. This Hegelian dialectic, problem, reaction, solution, and then you drive them forward. Biden, Trump, that I know. What else now is coming?
And of course, the moment the government says you cannot carry a gun, that should be a huge, huge red flag.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Especially if you're led by the system we are in. If they want to take away your guns, then you can be sure that the government will come after you. And so here in Switzerland, of course, fortunately, we are all armed.
I think Switzerland is one of the most armed countries in the world.
Absolutely. I mean, they also try to restrict it a bit more and so on, but we never had any big issues, you know. I mean, we don't have those mass shootings like in the States,
which are false flags anyway.
Of course. I mean,
those are designed to reduce. Those are designed to reduce gun ownership.
Gun, absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
But still, it's a more violent culture in the States in general, when you compare it now, or incidents with weapons and so on, than over here in Switzerland. But we have about the same. And we hardly have any issues. So that just shows, that Switzerland still consists of a more sound society, than for example, America is, since they took over the empire from the Brits, for 70 years, they have been bombing the shit out of the rest of the world, and the regime change, and they destroyed, their yaos, sending them to wars. They come back when they are 20 and so on. And it's terrible. Look at ICE. I think these are all former military guys, so they were trained how to treat, the people in the Middle East. And now they do the same with the Americans at home. So it has an influence. And Switzerland, of course, we never had a war for a few hundred years now. and we never fought the war. We never, So it's more peaceful.
Yeah, but that's also that's also an interesting observation, because apparently, Claudio, that if you have a society with guns, there will be more violence.
Not really. No, but we train. You know, we have weapons that we can defend ourselves against a tyrannical government at the end of the day. That is the basic idea of Thomas Jefferson or whoever. Or the George Napolitano said once, we don't have arms to shoot deer. We have arms to defend ourselves against a totalitarian government.
But that's the point. So in other words, if everybody in the country is armed, the government will actually fear the citizens.
Yeah, sure. Definitely much more, yeah. Yeah, but the more sophisticated, I mean, there is also Carol Quigley wrote once a book about arms, and he said the more specialized the arms become, the more totalitarian becomes the whole system. And when we had the invention of the Colt, you know, Samuel Colt, so everyone was able to buy weapons and so on. I mean, overall, that level came down again. And now, of course, I don't know. I mean, I have the feeling that all those weapons, you know, now we can see that a lot of money is fueled into the military-industrial complex. So I have the feeling, you know, that these weapons in the future might be used against the own population, you know, these drones and all that stuff. So these weapons are becoming more sophisticated, and they have an advantage against, you know, normal individuals with a pistol or a rifle and whatever. So we'll see how it will turn out. But the development overall is not pro-individual. It's really a bit more pro-authoritarian state.
I have found, Claudio, though, over the last few years, there has been a strong push in the skeptical / conspiratorial / alternative space for sovereignty. You know, it's about it's fighting for sovereignty again. But it's also become a bit of an empty phrase, because what do they mean? Because that can also lead to a collectivization of society, which takes you back to kind of socialist communist thinking.
Well, I mean, as I said, you know, I think at the end of the day, important is, you know, the direction we are going. And we cannot switch it anyway from A to B, you know, to change from this system into another one. We're going to have this world economic depression. We're going to have war. We're going to have civil wars. That's what's coming anyway. We're going to have shortages, fame, stuff like this. I think that's all coming. That's all linked. I mean, that's what we have seen every 8 years. But what's coming out of it, we don't know yet. And so, as I said, you know, I just want to be surrounded with sound individuals. And I think, you know, human beings, basically, I mean, love, and, you know, as long as love exists, I mean, then the game is not over. So, but, you know, how they want to organize themselves, hey, I mean, yeah, different solution. We just have to come to the conclusion that people can organize themselves and on a certain region, and no one is going to interfere, and they should look after themselves if their model is working. And then, but I mean, we have to start somewhere, you know, and right now.
Well, I mean, you've started somewhere by bringing out this new documentary. You're informing.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't expect that it will have a huge impact, of course. You know, but I hopefully.
But that's why I asked you at the beginning of the conversation: are most people dumb?
No, they're just, I mean, sheeps. I mean, the problem is really, that's what we have seen with Corona. I mean, it is really, you know, or let's call it that way, you know. Only the slave does not want to become free. He wants to become a slave master. So I distinguish between, you know, servants and free individuals. And I have to say that I'm surrounded with free individuals. And I also have my plan B, where it's a small village, not too many people, you know, a bit off-grid. So if stuff is coming, then I go there. And if more stuff is coming, then I pick my gold and then I move somewhere else. No, but yeah, I have to prepare. Yeah, you know, we have to. Yeah, the world is changing, and I don't have a solution. And you know, there is no. You know, the future will show. You know how, where if we're gonna have enough. I mean, I'm sure we're gonna have enough sound people, and they will gather together, guys who share the same principles. You know, and that's all.
But you also prepare through gold and silver.
Yeah. Because gold and silver is money, nothing else. It's the hardest currency on the planet. It's also, to me, it's also sound money because, you know, whenever people decide to exchange their fiat or paper wealth, whatever, into physical precious metals, I mean, then that money is out of the system. It's not being used, you know, for fractional reserve banking and all that shit. You know, basically the system that we finance the system, which is going to enslave us. You know, it's out, and you own it and you can move it. And I think in the days which are coming. You can always, an ounce of gold purchased a villa in Berlin during the Weimar Republic. You know, when all this artificial wealth is in artificial denominated paper currencies, Swiss franc or euros, whatever, when this is going to collapse, I mean, then you need money, and that's gold and silver. And that's why also these prices are going up. It makes absolutely sense because paper money is depreciating. It's not that the price of gold is rising. An ounce of gold is always an ounce of gold, you know, but the paper price for an ounce of gold is changing. And mainly it's the depreciating of paper money because they print more, they reduce interest rates again. So, you know, all the money in circulation, when there is new liquidity injected, then it's losing value, of course. And the US dollar already lost 99% versus gold since 1971. So you still can buy a little bit of gold with your US dollar, but I don't know how long, you know, this will last. You know, I think we really go in two, 3 years. I think that's the peak. Of course, nobody knows.
What do you make of Bitcoin?
I mean, I used to be a big fan of cryptocurrencies. I mean, I think 10 years, 12 years ago, we started doing conferences about the denationalization of money. And it's great to have a private player in competition with central banks and so on. So the idea of crypto and Bitcoin back then, I very much embraced it. When I see today and also I see the people and how the movement has changed, and then also that the hash or, you know, that is coming from the NSA or CIA, I think Bitcoin used to be the teaser for the digital system that we are seeing being established heavily, and, you know, artificial intelligence, corona, you know, lockdowns, stay at home, all that stuff. And that Bitcoin was just, you know, a teaser that, you know, the digital side, the digital future, that's what it's all about. But overall, I own a little bit, but there was always money. I thought, I purchased 10 years ago, I think, and I haven't checked it out since then. I purchased Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Monero. But, you know, I rather hold my gold and silver. And I think Bitcoin, maybe it was a fraud, you know, from the beginning. Could be. I would not exclude that thought any longer.
A central intelligence operation to get us ready for stable coins and CBDCs and digital ID.
Yeah, so to say.
I mean, Bitcoin is completely useless for me. I also have Bitcoin, but I can't do anything with it. I mean, I've got a wallet. Oh, it's a cool talking point. Yeah, I've got Bitcoin. Okay, cool. What do you do with it? No, nothing.
It's pretty limited. Yeah, I did not manage. I mean, it never became money. You know, it could be some people use it for real estate. I think that's the only transaction or one of the biggest cases that it's useful. But yeah, I mean, even if it goes up to a million, I mean, of course, I mean, let's assume if I have some money and now I have to decide, do I want to buy treasury bonds or Bitcoin? And I don't need it for the next few years. Most likely I would also pick Bitcoin, you know, because it's still better than the treasury bonds and all that stuff, which is going to disappear anyway. But overall, no, I mean, the whole blockchain move, everything is transparent, you know, everything is in the blockchain. I mean, yeah, the other side, you know, there, every coin has two sides. So to have that technology in a fully decentralized system would be amazing. I think it would be, it would allow tremendous advantages and prosperity and everything. But in a centralized system, it's, I mean, it's the end, you know, it's total control, of course. And
I think it's been co-opted anyway.
You mean what, co-opted?
Bitcoin.
I don't understand the question fully. You have to elaborate a bit.
No, I mean, I think like BlackRock and some of the huge players now have got into the game.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, it's... Mm. Definitely. I mean, you know, Bitcoin also, when I, okay, I'm in this gold and silver. I mean, so I was looking at the silver price over the last 10 years. And so there was, silver was hardly moving, hardly going anywhere. And I just realized, you know, even when we came into the new bull market for precious metals, I mean, silver still was quiet. And then I just, because, you know, the last bull market we had, 2000 to 2011, I mean, the guys who really want, you know, institutional money, the money managers and so on, the ones who understood in which cycle we are going, I mean, they were always buying silver because they were looking for, you know, higher prices, bigger chances to make, you know, a bigger gain. And so it was always the speculative side who moved into silver. But that side was missing for the past 10 years. So these guys were all buying crypto. So even if you look at the Western world, I mean, they have 0.6% is in physical precious metals or is in precious metals at all. 0.6, I mean, they're hardly nothing, but they have much more cryptos. So, I mean, also crypto has also been brought up as a competitor to gold, of course. That's why they were always talking about digital gold and so on. But I think, yeah, overall, I truly believe it could be part of this, of the script, you know, as you said before. I would... Today, based on the information I have, on the observations I made, I would also come to that conclusion.
Okay, Claudio, how can my audience watch World War III and find out more about gold and silver?
I mean, they basically can come to my homepage. It's claudiograss.ch. And there I also have a blog. So all the interviews are going to be released on my blog. They will also be released on the site of my friend, worldwar3documentary.com. But if they subscribe on my page, which is free, they will also receive all the interviews with a short, you know, with a text that I to give a short overview about the content. And then when the movie is coming out, they will also receive it automatically. And there they also find some information if they want to invest in precious metals and so on. I mean, it's all there.
Claudio Grass, again, my friend, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Always a pleasure, Jerm. Take good.